You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, US equities edged higher with growth shares outperforming so-called value stocks as investors bet that a higher than forecast rise in inflation won't be enough to slow stimulus measures. We see the S&P 500 touching an all-time high even after the US recommended pausing Johnson & Johnson's vaccines amid health concerns. But I really don't know what the concern is. If you've got six blood clots out of 7 million doses, the odds are infinitesimally small. You've got greater chances of getting a blood clot if you fly in a plane or take oral contraceptives. Anyway, we see the tech-heavy NASDAQ also rising to a record. And here on the Aussie, the MTN within touching distance of 100 Rand per share as My Broadband came out today, stating unequivocally that it's got the best network in the country. Your street dogs tonight, Rob Towell, Portfolio Manager at Sasfin Securities, and we're trying to get Chris Gilmore, independent analyst over in Scotland. We're battling to get him, Rob. So it's you to kick us off. What did you make of, firstly, that news around the Johnson & Johnson trial?
Yes, it is a bit disappointing that they're going to pause that, but I do think it'll just be a pause. I think, as you say, it's one in 1 million chance of something going wrong. I think what they need to do is just put... take a look at those six cases and see if there's anything similar between them, and maybe they can isolate what the problem is. But I think it will come back online relatively soon. And I think also in the States, you know, they've got multiple vaccines, so I don't think it will slow the roll down in the States too much either. And you saw initially, as that news came out, all the futures and US futures dropped, but recovered quite well since then.
And it really would be strange for us to pause a rollout that hasn't even started here on the back of this. And the fact that we're even considering it is highly, highly unusual because we've had no blood clotting incidents reported during the J&J Sasonke trial over here. But we'll have to follow things closely because things haven't really been following the rational course of events. Obviously, the other big news in markets was CPI, and the volumes initially today were quite slow. It felt like the market was just treading water, waiting to see what that US CPI print was going to be. And we had a rise of 0.6% in March, and that takes the yearly rise to 2.6%. But still, I guess where markets are expecting inflation to be, considering all the stimulus, because we didn't see too much of a taper tantrum repeat.
No, I think market expectation was 2.5. It came out at 2.6, so a little bit higher, but not much. And I think, you know, if you, as you say, if you see how much stimulus has been flowing into the system, you know, inflation is not that high. And if you actually strip out one or two items out of that number, which was one or two volatile food prices in there, the actual real core inflation was about 1.6%. So it's still slightly benign, so it's not quite there yet, and I don't see you seeing that temper tantrum come just yet. I think you're going to have to see more inflation, and we saw also one of the Fed Bullard speaking last night, and he said, you know, they're happy not to do anything with the interest rates for 2 years. So let's see where it goes. I think you'd really need to see inflation moving towards the 3 level to get the market to settle for the amount of stimulus that's coming through.
Absolutely. This is just normal inflationary pressures that we're going to see. And also, if you read what many of the various central bank governors are saying at a state level, that they're expecting a temporary blip in inflation, but they then expect some of the longer-term structural forces to continue to weigh on inflation. And for a while now, it's been a big concern that we might see deflation in the US in this kind of Japanese-style stagflationary period. And so I don't see this just yet as too much of a cause for concern. What are you expecting for US earnings season, which kicks off tomorrow? We've got some big earnings this week. We've got the big banks, BlackRock, Tesco, PepsiCo, JD Sport, Delta Airlines. What are you going to be looking out for?
I think they're going to be a set of strong earnings. I think it's a nice mix of earnings as well. You're starting to see, you've seen some airline stocks there with the banks, with a little bit of tech. So it's quite a good mix of earnings coming through. We're looking to see what if there was a slight slowdown in January and February, you know, as we had a second wave and third wave of COVID during different sections of the world. And if the forward-looking outlook from these companies is positive and they still then they see a continued improvement in their earnings, the actual numbers themselves we think will be relatively firm.
And is there an absolute level? I know it was quite a good earnings period for the last quarter. Is there an expectation of an average for the S&P 500 that we're looking at for this quarter?
We're not looking at an average. We just want a good solid set of numbers from especially the big sectors. You know, we're thinking that tech is going to have a good set of numbers as well. And they've been, you know, sold off slightly as people have gone back into value. And also what we're looking at is value's earnings actually there? So everyone's done the switch into value, but is the value earnings there? And we think that there'll still be strong earnings from tech. So that's something that we keep an eye on.
Absolutely, and we're also having a look at some of the macro, the high-frequency data that is coming out of South Africa as well, as we welcome Chris Gilmore from, I don't know what the weather is like in Scotland at the moment, because it's been a very strange spring over there, where we had sleet and snow and then sun in the afternoon. Chris, how are you doing? What's the weather like over in, is it sunny Scotland at the moment?
Well, Michael, if I tell you, there's hardly a cloud in the sky. It's blue sky, beautiful, but the temperature's not good. single digits, and it gets down to about -1 at night, so it's a bit cool.
Nothing that a wee dram can't sort out in terms of
my thoughts precisely.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, talk to me about the mood over in the UK at the moment, because I saw snapshots from Soho last night, and with everyone being let out and go to the pub for the first time, it seemed like a great outpouring of relief. What's the mood like around COVID?
Well, you have to distinguish, first of all, between England and Scotland here, because the English are way ahead of us. They opened up the pubs again for the first time in about 3 months, I guess. And as you rightly say, on the 12th, I think that was a Monday, they started queuing at midnight to be able to go and actually get a drink. Outside, by the way, you can't go drink inside yet. That's only from the 17th of May. So, you know, in terms of this roadmap, they're taking it very, very slowly. And, you know, the vaccination rate has been incredibly high, one of the highest in the world. And that's going very, very nice. There's been a little bit of a hiccup as far as supply has been concerned. But nonetheless, they've got about 32 million people vaccinated so far. And once the supply hiccup is out of the way, then they want to have all adults done by July. So that's going nicely. The number of deaths and cases is dropping dramatically. And they're doing this softly approach, trying to get back to normality, but doing it very, very slowly and gradually. Scotland, as I say, is about 2 weeks behind, and this hasn't gone unnoticed by the public in summer.
I don't want to say typical, but 32 million, that's only what, 31.7 million more people than we've managed to vaccinate so far. But we haven't really started our trial. Have you picked up on this news around the J&J vaccine, which now is apparently being paused in the US because six people came down with a very, very rare case of venous sinus thrombosis, this blood clot, out of 7 million doses? That really doesn't seem large enough to stop a rollout of a vaccine, surely.
You know, context is everything. And if you actually look at the, as you rightly say, I mean, so many, and this applies to AstraZeneca as well, even more so. If you actually look at the percentage of blood clots relative to the numbers of actual vaccinations that have taken place, even if there is a causal link, and that has not been established beyond any reasonable doubt yet, but even if there is, the incidence is far lower than the contraceptive pill, for example.
Yeah.
It's far lower than the incidence of blood clots caused by smoking. And it's significantly lower than the incidence of blood clots caused by COVID itself. So whichever way you slice and dice it, you're far better off going for the vaccine, even if it does have these very, 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 very infinitesimally low incidences of blood clotting.
And now much has been reported in the British media about the possibility of adopting a type of COVID-19 vaccine passport just to help with reigniting the travel industry. And there are some concerns around this sort of being used in a very dystopian manner to try and control people by authoritarian regimes. What do you make of the idea of a COVID vaccine passport? You wrote about it in Business Day. Just share your thoughts.
That's right. Yeah, it's gone down like a lead balloon with the travel industry. And as far as the civil liberties people are concerned, they don't like it either because it's too much like Big Brother, basically controlling what people do. Now, you contrast that what's happened in Denmark with the Corona Pass. And the Danes are only too happy to allow this to happen because the way it's been constructed in Denmark is quite different. Yes, it's required to get into theatres and restaurants and hairdressers and tattoo parlours, all this kind of stuff. But there are three categories here. You can either be vaccinated and show evidence of that, or you can have COVID tests, or regular COVID tests, or you can demonstrate that you've had the virus. And given the fact that COVID testing in Denmark is free, I don't know whether these lateral flow tests or what, but it's free and it's very easy. And then some people are getting tested once or twice a week. On that kind of basis, people are more than happy to put their credentials into the system.
Yep.
And just actually work on it. In other words, there's no sense of discrimination anywhere along the line. Whereas the British one, it's highly discriminatory, I think. It's going to discriminate against people who don't want. There's a large chunk of people in Britain who don't actually want to be vaccinated. Well, that's fine. So you say to them, well, okay, go for the test. But there again, if you have to pay £100-120 a time, you know, for a PCR test, which is, by the way, not that reliable either, this kind of makes it all a bit messy. So then you get into the system of having this traffic light system whereby you have green, amber, and red. And the red is for countries on the red list, including South Africa, which are regarded as being high risk. And people coming in from those countries, or if you visit there and come back, then you have to quarantine for 10 days. Now, that is an incredibly expensive exercise, not to say very, very time-consuming. Now, on the green list, I mean, the plan is that, yes, you still have to have a COVID test before you go, one of which can be a lateral flow test, which is cheap, but the other one has to be a PCR test, again, which is quite expensive. And the amber one is kind of somewhere in between where you still have to isolate, self-isolate for 10 days. So it's not even close to being a vaccine passport in its purest form. I think they're working towards that, and this is the kind of stopgap. The Israelis are the people who've really done this properly with their green passport. And that seems to be working very, very nicely. But when you've got like 90% of the population vaccinated, you can afford to do this type of thing.
Well, then, I mean, that is the bottom line, isn't it? We really need to be applying pressure on the South African government to get our vaccine program out of neutral. We're not even in first gear. We're not even vaccinating people through a program. We're running a Sasonke Phase 3B trial. We can't even talk about a vaccination rollout yet. To bring you back in, Rob, and thanks for waiting patiently while we got Chris back up to speed about what we're talking about while we're trying to get him on the line. Cappy Tech results. I'm going to be chatting to Harry Faree a little bit later. The bank celebrated its 20th anniversary last month and is calling itself the biggest digital bank in the country. Any which way you slice it, though, it is an exceptional performance from the bank over the last 20 years. How did it fare during COVID?
It looks like it fared quite well, and it's amazing. You know, they're paying a dividend of 16 Rand compared to 7.55 Rand last year. An interesting number in their numbers today was their capital adequacy number, 37% ratio. You know, all the other banks are at 16, so and or below. So it's you know, they're well, their balance sheet is strong, and they're looking really good. And you know, people are really worried about Capitec over this period. Were there clients that would be more affected by losses of jobs, etc.? But you know, in this set of numbers, they're a really good, strong set of numbers, and surprised a lot of analysts there.
And I think to bring you in on this point, Chris, what might concern some shareholders in Capitec is what happens with government trying to implement some form of austerity, because a big chunk of Capitec's client base is in the public sector. So we're going to see wage freezes or potentially cuts. That might be a concern, but a very, very healthy set of numbers, these.
Yeah,
They are, and I mean, if you look at how successful they've been, even at the height of a pandemic, to be able to get 160,000 new clients in every month, it really is quite an incredible feat. So, you know, to answer your question, Michael, I think these guys at Capitec, Harry and before him, I've forgotten the chap's name now, but demonstrated an intense set of innovative techniques. Then, you know, if one door closes or one door becomes less available, shall we say, they'll just find another door. I mean, their model is becoming incredibly attractive and incredibly seductive to an incredibly wide range of the population.
And that's why I think growth is certainly outside of South Africa from here. You've proven that it can work and it can scale, and it's a model that just taking the brand into other markets, you can see growing potentially into other middle-income countries. TCS Tinkoff Financial Services, TCS Tinkoff Credit Services, that's the one. Kuki Kerman loves talking about that, where we do share shootouts. A Russian upstart bank that's doing similarly well over in Russia as well. Then we saw some mining data out today. Rob, surprising to some in the market who weren't expected this quick bounce back following February's contraction. It was a sharp contraction in February of 8.4%. We see output growing by 0.8% year on year. But I suppose unsurprising to those who have been following the commodity complex, because mining has been unusually strong over the last few quarters.
Yes, I think so. And I think, you know, we've had very strong commodity prices, and, you know, our miners are going to try and get that metal out the country as best as they can. You can see that they were exporting and production was moved up. I think also you saw people back at work in January and February, all of it, you know, everybody coming back after the holidays as well, and that pushed through February and into the numbers now. So, you know, really good set of numbers. Even with a little bit of load shedding, we still got those numbers. And, you know, if we can continue pushing out metals like that, carry on exporting it, it supports the rand as well. And you see the rand has been stubbornly strong, and I think a lot of that is to do with our exports of our metals.
And thankful for all of that, I'm sure, is SARS Commissioner Edward Kiesvetter, because it's ensuring that they beat on revenue collection because of the taxes that these mining companies are paying at the moment. Speaking of the commodity complex, Eskom CEO André de Ruyter is under fire, Chris, and it's no surprise as we see this RET faction inside the ANC and many who've benefited from the rent-seeking and the patronage and the blatant theft and corruption in procurement at state-owned enterprises. Once they're fingered, what do? They play the race card, or they play the regular appointment of capable people card. What do you make of this latest claim against Eskom CEO?
Yes, and well, you know, it's interesting the way he's handled it. Nothing seems to faze the racer at all. And look, it's a lot of utter nonsense, obviously. I mean, there is no substance to this at all. And of course, if you remember, a few months ago, they tried it with his COO, Oberholzer, as well. And that came to nothing either. It's, I think, really, it's the last kicks of a dying horse. They realize that de Ruyter and his team are actually, for the first time in a long time, are shown to be effective. It's a slow process, but he warned everyone that it would be a slow process because of the monumental size of the job that has to be done here. And these greedy fellows in the RET, they're trembling because they see their I'm trying to think of a nice diplomatic way of putting it. They're seeing their piggy bank disappearing in front of their eyes. So they'll do anything to try and displace the radar and go. Thankfully, that's not happening.
Yeah, well, that is a good sign. That is a sign that the noose is tightening around the RET faction's neck. Chris Gilmore, independent analyst over in Scotland, as the line started turning you into our helium-induced market commentator, and Rob Tarwell, portfolio manager at Sasson Securities, with your view from the market.